Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Tony Wesolowski, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Tony, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Steve. Glad to be to join you.
All right. Well, lately our topics really have been events taking place beyond Moscow. Last Monday, it was Khabarovsk and the protests there, which have continued every day since then, and in fact, since shortly after the regional governor was arrested on July 9th. This week, though, we're going to talk about protests and other developments quite a bit closer to Moscow, but in the other direction, in Belarus. There's a presidential election there less than a week from today, on August 9th, on Sunday, and it's already an election like none other in Belarus since the authoritarian president, Alexander Lukashenko, came to power in 1994. Until now, every election has seemed like a done deal well in advance, with Lukashenko controlling all the levers of power and the state media. And in fact, no election in Belarus since 1994 has been deemed free, fair, and democratic by credible international observers. This time, it's different, at least going into it. After several would-be candidates who were seen as the top potential challengers to Lukashenko were barred from the ballot, and at least two of them jailed, opposition to the longtime president, and in fact, a swell of public support for his opponents, has coalesced around one of the four other candidates on the ballot, Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya. She has no prior political experience and is 37, which is just 2 years older than the minimum age for a president in Belarus. And her husband is a popular vlogger who has called Lukashenko a, quote, cockroach to be stamped out, and was barred from the ballot and, in fact, is now in jail. Tsikhanouskaya, meanwhile, has been attracting big crowds, really kind of unprecedented, at campaign rallies nationwide in the last few weeks. Tens of thousands, what appeared to be a record for Belarus since independence in the collapse of the Soviet Union, counted by as 63,000 people attended a demonstration in Minsk late last week. Tony, you've been covering the campaign in Belarus. This is kind of a broad question, but what's going on? What would you say are the main factors in these rallies and the surge of support for an opposition candidate who was recently pretty much unknown?
Okay. First off, I think Lukashenko's caused a lot of the problems himself by really underestimating the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic, mm-hmm. Calling it a mass psychosis. Belarus, with about 9.5 million people, has almost as many confirmed infections as neighboring Ukraine, which has a population of four times greater. So when state media and Lukashenko is saying there was no problem, Belarusians themselves were seeing something much different. So his credibility and his standing as the leader, the batka, the father who could give them safety and protect them was really hard. Furthermore, Belarusians themselves stepped in to produce masks, to make respirators, and were delivering these to ill-equipped hospitals. So I think this was really important, and it showed to Belarusians themselves that they could be actors and that they could have an impact on what was going on in their country. So that was one thing, and then Serhiy Tikhanovskaya kind of stepped in and really tapped into this growing frustration and disillusionment with Lukashenko. And, when he said that they should take up their bed slippers to squash the cockroaches, he referred to Lukashenko. It was clear that, Lukashenko wasn't going to let this stand. And soon he was, locked up and is now could be facing 8 years in jail. So one thing, though, instead of Belarusians kind of packing it in and not taking to the streets and, kind of succumbing to this increasing crackdown, mm-hmm. they've ignored that. And a lot of them, as Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya said at her latest rally, She said that she no longer has fear. There's no longer fear that most Belarusians don't fear the regime anymore, which was kind of a key moment. I think Svetlana Alexeyevich said that, you know, Lukashenko thought that he could deceive this silent society, that he could tell tales, scare them with fear, mm-hmm. but nothing like that happened. You know, there's a new generation of Belarusians. They don't watch state media. They're not, taking in Lukashenko's message. They're getting, another narrative from social media, from alternative media. Younger Belarusians are studying more in the West and looking to go to Moscow or Russia. So their outlook has changed. And it's really after 26 years, people just really want to change.
Yeah, that's probably sort of the main point. But as you mentioned, lots of factors that you've actually covered in several stories about this during the campaign. I'll just add, I was in Belarus after, I believe, the 2006 election, and there have been other elections where there have been, you know, fairly big protests after the vote. But here we see, and in each case, they've essentially been crushed. Here we see a big kind of gathering of support for an opposition candidate and against Lukashenko, in weeks before the vote. It just seems to be gathering steam. So, obviously it's hard to predict what the real result of the poll of the election will be, and what there's kind of a dichotomy between, I think, the state poll. A state poll that was on state TV had Lukashenko at 70 or so percent, but another poll that was making rounds predicted that if there was a runoff, which I believe is the case, if neither candidate wins 50% of the vote, Lukashenko and Tsikhanouskaya would be essentially have about 34-35%. So, everything's setting up for what may be, a sharp disagreement about the results of the vote and what that means.
Definitely, definitely. I think Tsikhanouskaya was really smart right from days after the Central Election Commission announced the candidates. She quickly teamed up with Viktor Babarika and the Valer Tsapkala campaigns. Mm-hmm. And this, really, I think, kind of gave her a lot of credibility. And I think, experts were saying that, Lukashenko left her get onto the ballot because he didn't deem her to be a threat. But by teaming up with these Viktor Babarika, a former bank chairman, Belgazprom, Tsapkala, former U.S. ambassador, founder of Minsk High Tech Park, these are people that have a lot of respect mm-hmm. in Belarusian society, and Valer Karbelich was saying that, was somebody who might have who supported Tsikhanouskaya, kind of a firebrand blogger, would see, having these two campaigns involved, that there's, a practical side, people that know how to run things, manage things.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And also Tsikhanouskaya is, one of the main things that she seems to be pledging and that's appears to be, attracting support for her is her pledge that if she wins, which I imagine the election commission, well, if she wins the election, she would hold a new fair election at some point in the near future. And I think a lot of people, including the writer, Svetlana Alexeyevich, said that, that's one of the things that attracted them to her, saying sort of like, okay, we'll start afresh with a new fair election and kind of break with a quarter century of what we have been having.
Right, exactly. I mean, she would be more, if she was to win, she would be kind of a transitional figure. So, what her positions are on certain policy issues, and she's been asked that, might somewhat be moot, since she would theoretically not, she would give up the office and right. would be, these candidates that were barred would be taking part in a new, fresh election.
Exactly. All right, well, now it is Belarus, but there are several aspects of the election and the campaign there that involve Russia. Lukashenko has been accusing Russia of interference for a long time, you know, for years, and specifically in this election campaign, and suggesting that some of his opponents are essentially Russian plants. And last week, the situation took a bizarre turn when Belarusian authorities arrested 33 men they say are fighters from the Kremlin-linked private military company Wagner, who were, again, according to claims by the Belarusian authorities, involved in an alleged plot to, quote, destabilize the situation ahead of the election. Now, Russia claims the men were only on their way to a third country and just missed their flight. And some analysts say that may be a plausible explanation, at least the part about them being on their way to another country. Wagner fighters are known or believed to have operated in Syria, Libya, Sudan, and a number of other countries. And there are reasons why they might travel through Belarus. Tony, from what you've seen, is there more evidence pointed to some kind of a Russian operation targeting Belarus and the election, or more evidence pointing to Lukashenko taking advantage of a situation in order to kind of further his own interests in the election? And I guess another possibility is that Minsk and Moscow are in cahoots on this.
I don't see kind of Moscow trying to stir the pot up before the election. I think they're kind of sitting back and seeing that Lukashenko's kind of created his own problems for himself. I think these mercenaries, or alleged mercenaries from Wagner, probably were transiting through Belarus to probably some site in the Middle East or whatever. They didn't look like they were some type of espionage unit that was going to cut to carry out some type of instability operation. But that's speculation. For Moscow, I mean, they're getting set up with Lukashenko. That's definitely true. I think back in December, you know, Lukashenko and Putin were to meet in Sochi, sign agreements, these roadmaps to finalize, deeper integration under this 1999 Union Treaty. That didn't happen. I think after that, you know, the Kremlin kind of threw up its hands. This was a big, big loss of face for Putin. And it was after that that you had this talk about, you know, Putin kind of tinkering with the Constitution to extend maybe his stay in power in Russia, because this Union Treaty was seen by some as a way that he could extend his power at right. the head of some kind of body that would have been part of this Belarus-Russia stronger, more deeper integration unit.
Right.
So I think they had enough of him, but on the other hand, when they look at the candidates out there, I mean, again, we don't know Tikhanovskaya. She's a transitional figure, but yesterday she said she's opposed to this Russian Union deal. Some have pointed to Viktor Babarika, maybe it being close to Moscow, since he was the head of Bell Gazprom Bank, which is almost all owned by Gazprom and Gazprom Bank. So this election has been so much about just change. And when you go to these rallies, you're seeing red, white, Belarusian, the first republic flag, and even some sort of the new Lukashenko flag. But there are no, like, for example, in Ukraine, when you had the Maidan protests, there were EU flags also in the crowd. You're not seeing that kind of that message in there. So it seems to be that foreign element, whether, you know, we're going to go east or west, it's kind of missing. And Tikhanovskaya said that also, that, you know, it's not a choice between east and west. We want to have good relationships with all sides. I mean, she's also, you know, deferred on that, whether, you know, the question of Crimea, saying whether it's, you know, Ukrainian territory or not. So she seems, you know, to really be treading carefully, not wanting to kind of stir the Russian bear any
right.
further.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, it seems like sort of the Russian factor, aside from what Lukashenko, you know, what this Wagner accusations and what Lukashenko has been saying, actually relations with Russia have not been a big element of the campaign. You know, it's more about Belarus. But it will be interesting to see, you know, and none of the candidates, as far as I know, have been very critical of Russia. But it will be interesting to see, you know, how Russia, if it's watching and waiting kind of now, possibly, you know, how it reacts when whatever happens, on election day and going forward.
Right. I don't know. Frederick Kemp from the Atlanta Council has written a piece saying, you know, watch for an August surprise if, you know, Russia's doesn't like the way things are, the turn of events in Belarus. I don't know if that will happen, but I definitely Russia will not, you know, stand pat. I mean, there's ways that they can influence events. But as far as maybe sending in some type of troops or something, I mean, it's very early to say, speculative, but you know, I don't see that, but they're definitely watching events, and they won't. I don't think they'd like any of these alternative candidates to come to power. At least with, you know, Lukashenko, it's a known quantity there. They know what to get. They're getting with him.
Right, the devil we know. That always does seem to be a big factor. All right, we're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Tony, thanks very much for joining me.
It was nice to be with you, Steve.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.